So what we're doing is we're taking a topic like, a question about, home exemptions or escrow or whatever, or my tax is going to go up because home prices are going up. And then it brings that actually like advertiser into, sorry, Jed, marketing partner.
controlled vocabulary, Dave.
Yeah, into the...
Does he have a shock collar on you for this?
It brings him into the story and they get branded in a very sort of like organic kind of way, you know? And so it's a very different way, I think, of like positioning advertisers. It puts them in, I did it again. It really kind of puts them in like the, it puts them into the kind of a very like, they're not a boxy ad basically sitting somewhere that you kind of scroll by, or an ad that is like overly intrusive and like smacking you in the face. It like actually makes them useful, and they are useful.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Town News. Town News delivers solutions, services, and guidance empowering local media organizations to thrive in an ever-changing digital world. Contact Town News today to learn more how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at townnews.com. Hello and welcome back to the News Nirvana podcast. I am your host, Nick Parker. I've got with me two guests from Checkout DFW, David Arkin and Jed Williams, co-founders, and they have separate titles too. I think they're both janitor and head janitor. Do I have those right?
You nailed it. It's never been more glamorous than having that on your business card. That's called a midlife crisis, I think.
Well, look, I want to start. I want to start, and we're going to tell the Checkout DFW story and how you guys have kind of a unique and different approach to suburban and metro newspaper. You're doing things a little differently, but here's the thing that really sticks out to me, because for a century, this title was not a part of discussion about those who ran newspapers. You're entrepreneurs. We're thinking about startups and business with news a lot different than we did for the previous century. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll take that, I guess, to start. David will jump in, I'm sure. To be clear, and this is no slight at any other type of publication or media out there, but we didn't build a newspaper. This is not a newspaper company. It's not a magazine company. It's not a broadcast outfit. And it's a very different type of niche, local and community media product. But at the beginning and the end of the day, I'll just speak for myself. Sure, we both love media. We both love building things in media. We both have a deep, shared, rooted passion for community media. But I first and foremost self-identify as an entrepreneur. It's entrepreneurship. It's building. And I think the lessons, hopefully, good and bad along the way, are germane to media operators, traditionally and or new. But I think they're germane to other businesses, too, and other entrepreneurs. And I take motivation, ideation, learning, certainly from other media entrepreneurs, but from lots of non-media entrepreneurs too.
David, I'm gonna bring you in, because I think you and I spent about 10 minutes together in the news world with some of our previous lives. But you have a news background, an editorial side background, and I don't know about your journalism school experiences or your past reporting, but they didn't teach us to be entrepreneurs when we came up as reporters. That wasn't a thing.
Yeah. So it's sort of interesting. I think about people who are like in newsrooms creating things. And in today's world, there's like no limits on, what you kind of can create and what you can, kind of dream up. And I think that sort of skill set is very like, it's actually for people who are like not, are doing more than, reporting, they're actually doing kind of product development. And that's been going on for years and years and years, just in different ways. In the older ways, it was like, a unique special section, and then maybe an event around that special section. And then it became like, how to bring in a video and audio and elements and those sorts of things into what you're doing. And now everything's kind of becoming productized. And I think that sort of skill set is really leading people to think to themselves, I actually have an idea here, and I think I can try that idea. I think the thing that's interesting on the news side is that without business side experience and talk about what did you not learn in journalism school, like business side anything, you know, right. I didn't get a business class, and I'm sure I didn't take a business class in college, you know, you learn all that. And so like the whole idea of like needing to take in the product idea and, you know, skill set, but having to figure out how to apply that through kind of like, you know, business side experience that you kind of have to get now in the newsroom is really sort of an interesting thing to think about. I think it's why we're seeing more and more of these examples, because newsrooms have just been required to, you know, really understand the business side, you know, more than ever now.
Yeah. And we've said this a few times on some of the episodes here, that the wall between editorial, the brick wall between editorial and the business side is now more of a thin veneer, right? or even a smoky substance.
I would just say on that point, if you still have a brick wall, you better take down those bricks and you better find a different surface to use for your wall. And I don't mean that as a taboo kind of statement at all. I guess I'll only just speak from our experience, but David, please set me right if I'm astray here. But I mean, David is in the weeds with me on the revenue and business work every single day. And I, you know, he may love it, he may not love it. There may be days where he loves working with me on it and other days where he hates it, but, or somewhere in between, but it's just the reality. You know, we have a product that's a community product that's about informing our communities and enlightening our communities and activating our communities and also serving our business partners and our community partners at the exact same time. And it's a product built around great, unique, engaging content from the man you're talking to opposite me right now. Well, that same content that serves our audiences is the same special sauce that fuels so much of our business model. And not only do we not shy away from that, we broadcast that because that's what makes us different as a media company and as a different, you know, I think nimble and kind of dynamic media company. And so, yeah, I'm not saying you shouldn't have standards. You should. And you should have communication policies and expectations and all those sorts of things. But that notion of a brick wall or a insert term wall here, or, you know, they're on the sixth floor and I'm on the third floor and you can't use my conference room and we're never eating lunch together. And like that stuff's just, the reality is it's just got to go.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that like there still has to be in all that, and Jed used words like standards. I tell sometimes to say to Jed, and I don't think we should do that. I don't think we can do that. But more than not, I try to say to Jed, how can I make this work so we can make a sale? And, you know, that's just sort of thinking about how do we sort of align the product in a way that, you know, people like it and want to actually use it. I mean, one of the most unique things I think about what we're doing that I just never heard when I was at different media companies is just how much people like love this thing. I mean, typically people don't talk about like how much they love their newspaper. You know, they all have like bad nicknames for it that always, always like hurt my feelings a little bit, you know? But like, that's not the way this is. People like have like a good glowy feel about this. And when they have that, you know, you have the ability, one, to build lots of audience, and you have the ability to build, you know, revenue connected to the quality of the product that you're kind of creating. And that's what's so different. So I don't even think about a wall anymore. I just think about like, how do we align ourselves and make sure that we're doing the right thing for the audience?
Yeah. And just to add to that, that word alignment is so key. There are tons of examples in media, even recent media in the last 5-10 years. And I mean, David, you and I have talked about these before, that they get astray or they get off track or something doesn't work because there's misalignment or there was never alignment between the business part of the operation and the content and audience part of it. And I call this kind of perverse motivation. And what I mean by that is like this idea that if one side grows, the other side suffers, or if one side does really well, it means that the other side is not positioned to do as well. We're going to build a really, really big audience, but it's going to be disadvantageous to advertising. Or we're just going to like overemphasize page views to sell advertising, but it's going to create a crummy user experience and it's going to dilute our content. Like, I don't know how we got to that place in media, but we got there too many times. And you looked at it and you're like, wait a minute, they are like way over indexed on content and haven't even thought about their business. That's not going to work because they're going to be out of business. Or all they're focusing on is a page view grab here or a display ad grab or pivot to video or whatever. And they're completely compromising everything that they're supposed to stand for with content and serving audiences. And that's not going to work either. And so it doesn't mean we're perfect. We're challenged by this every day, but we've tried to build this business and every day stay true to this idea of like spiritually, philosophically, can you do right by the reader and the business partner in parallel all the time, or as much of the time as possible? And the answer is 100% of the time, no. But you, as long as you're really focused on that, more times than not, yes. Or you work your way to yes on that. And I think that's where you fundamentally have to be to preserve that sense of alignment.
I want to put a pin there, and I think we'll I'm sure that we will come back to that, to that alignment of audience and your business partners. But let's take a second and let's rewind, and let's go back to the start of Checkout DFW. You are about to hit your 5-month anniversary, which, look, we are all business owners. You count every one of those anniversaries. They're all a big milestone. But what is Checkout DFW? What is the product that you're doing? And you said in the beginning, Jed, it's not a newspaper, it's not a news org, it's a different thing. So what is the product that you are doing with Checkout DFW?
I think David should take that one.
Yep. Sure. So I think the best way to describe this is I like to describe it by like sort of like life cycles that we sort of like serve and that we sort of saw. So, you know, we saw a lot of a lot of population moving to Texas. This has been going on for a while, but it's been incredibly hot. You know, I just did a story this morning about Census Bureau numbers, and I think Texas had like 5 of the top 10 biggest population increases in the last, you know, year. So it's been going on for a while, but lots of people moving in and lots of confusion around that for people that are either like in their, you know, in the city, which is the Dallas-Fort Worth area that we're in, or people that are kind of thinking about moving from out of state. There's just a lot of, you know, unclarity on like, what do I need to know to sort of make good decisions about, you know, kind of coming to that place. And so we sort of think about this in 3 ways. One way, people who are thinking about moving somewhere, what information do they have? They're trying to figure out the right school district to kind of, you know, buy their house in. They're trying to think about what their commute time is. They're trying to understand, you know, all the things that might kind of factor into like the eventual home value of their home, like what's going to be built behind me, all those things. And like, that's the thing with all these things is it's really hard to find all this information. It's out there, but it's not really kind of connected. So like, that's one theme. The second theme is like somebody that now has like actually moved somewhere. And what do they do now that they've moved? They've got to figure out how to like set up their life. And so who are they going to use for services? You know, what schools are they going to get their, you know, kids into? What youth sports are they going to sign kids up for? Like, it is hard and it's not easy to find that. And then finally, you know, I now live here and how do I, you know, take advantage of this city? And that might be somebody who's been there for a year, somebody who's been there for 10 years. You know, where there are places where there's growth and new roads are being built, new businesses are popping up. Like there's a lot of questions about what all that means and, you know, being able to sort of like give people information about that. And so what's interesting is like our idea with this was to like take like one piece of content and like weave that through all 3 of those different sort of life cycles. And we've been able to do that actually, you know, really kind of effectively. So the problem here that we were trying to solve for was how do I sort of understand what's kind of, how do I make a good decision about where to move, how to move, what do I do when I actually kind of move there? And what was happening in the market and still is, I mean, we are a solution, but we're not the only solution, is, you know, people couldn't go to single places to get all the information. They're going to realtors or going to Facebook groups. They were, you know, going to kind of reload guides. And so what we tried to do is we tried to take all that together and put it under one house, if you will, and made it easy for people to sort of like, you know, make better decisions for themselves kind of going forward. So at a high, high level, that's kind of what we're trying to do.
How is it that you are, before we get to the tying into the business partner side, how is it that you are reusing that content through each of those three pieces? How do you look at it and say, I'm going to make sure it gets into each of those?
Yeah. So interesting example here. I don't know if you know what Buc-ee's is, but Buc-ee's is like this very popular gas station across Texas. Now it's popping up in other states. It might sound weird to people, but it is like a cult like thing.
It's a phenomenon.
Look, as an out of towner, I've been there.
Let me just say, I know lots of families that commute there on weekends an hour to like make Buc-ee's runs. It's a real thing.
Well, I spend a lot of time in Facebook groups and I saw a lot of questions for a few weeks about Buc-ee's. Like, what is this? What do I need to get there? Is it safe to go there? Like all these like funny questions. And so I was like, you know, we should do a little story. A lot of our model is like, we see people that have questions. We can see some data around themes. Then we try to like answer those questions. So I was like, let's do a piece on Buc-ee's. I'm like, you know, but like, if we do this piece, I'm like, if this is what Buc-ee's is, like people who live here already are going to like roll their eyes at us. So I was like, we got to do this in a way that like helps people who haven't moved here, but maybe like driving and going to run into Buc-ee's, people who just moved here, who maybe don't totally know what Buc-ee's is yet. And then people who actually lived here for a while. And so we approached it on like, hey, here are five things that you should buy next time you kind of go to Buc-ee's. And that worked for everyone because we were able to introduce what Buc-ee's is. We're able to kind of make it work for people who lived there for a while. And like, that was a great way of kind of weaving it. We have to be careful on how we sort of approach it. But I think it's a very like real world example on how we can kind of create relevance.
I just want to add one thing on the notion of customer life cycles, because I realize that's kind of a geekier jargony term, but really we're talking about what David's talking about, which is we have three different types of readers and they're in different journeys and they're trying to get different jobs done. So if you take a jobs to be done framework, that's what we're using here. What's important about that is like all of the content, generally all 1200 plus pieces of content on the site and everything that David builds with our content map, we're not just building to build. Or we're not just building because, oh, that sounds interesting. Let's just go do that. And I think that's different, frankly, than so many traditional publishing models, which are sort of like, we publish, we decide, you read, maybe, if you're interested. But like, here we go. Here's our news budget for the day. Like, here's what we're sending to you. Good luck. And that's just not how we've approached this at all. And before we ever launched, we did just dozens and dozens of interviews and in-depth conversations with so many different kind of stakeholders and constituents in this market, whether it was community leaders, schools leaders, lots of realtors, lots of real estate pros, mayors, parents, all these different groups. We're asking these questions about, you have these jobs you need to get done in your lives, whether as a business professional or just as a family member, person, whatever it might be. Where are you going to get these jobs done? Does this information exist? If it does at all, is it readily available, or is it difficult to find? Is it fragmented? Is it actually framed in a useful, relevant, helpful way to you? Or is it just sort of like published out there and you just kind of have to like make of it what you will? And we got so many responses that just basically suggested like, there's no shortage of content. There's really a glut of content in the market. That's not the point. The point is getting at it, finding it is difficult. It's fragmented. It's often inaccessible. And it's often framed in a way where the point doesn't seem to be relevance or utility. It might just be whatever, a piece of content about something, but there's not a so what for me and my life and me for my family. And so what we try to do, we're not perfect, but we try to take this idea of, and we'll talk more about this with our mission and vision, that our content's about helpful real estate content, trusted local recommendations, hyper-local things to do, and expert advice. That's the type of content. That's the what. And then the who is exactly what David said, right? I'm thinking of moving to North Texas. I'm in the middle of my move and need to set my life up, and that's really stressful. Or I'm a longtime resident, but my needs are changing and the community around me is changing. Help me. Okay, how do we help each of those different personas with the type of content that we're creating? So it's really a matrix of matching content types and relevance to specific people and milestones. And I think, again, we're not perfect, but I think that's a really important way to think about who your users are and their jobs to be done before you ever start putting, you know, proverbial pen to paper with any content.
I would imagine that it has, one of the things that's helped you is even the people that are, you know, current residents in these communities, the approach to the community people live in has changed over the last 2 years because of what happened with all of the pandemic, right? I think people are engaged more in what is there that I can do or what is there for me in the community instead of just the, you know, so many in suburban communities where like I go to work, I come home, I take my kid to a sporting event.
Yeah.
I bring them home. And I think now there is an opportunity because so many more people are more often looking for those things to engage in around town.
I think it's very true. And I'll just pick up on that with a couple of things. So first off, you know, the communities that we're in 7 or 8 North, booming North Texas. I say suburbs. They're really not suburbs anymore in most cases.
No, they are cities of their own right.
They're cities unto themselves. Plano's not a suburb. Plano's a city. Frisco's not a suburb. Frisco's a city. McKinney, the same thing. These are, you look at any list out there, I'll go find you a Forbes list or a U.S. News and World Report list or whatever. These are not some of the fastest growing communities in North Texas or in Texas. These are some of the fastest growing communities in the country, because Texas is the fastest growing place in the country, and it's not even close. There are more than 300 people that move to North Texas every single day. I mean, that's a staggering number to sit back and absorb. So one, you just have all this influx of people, an unprecedented number that we firmly believe need and demand the type of content that we're creating. So that creates an opportunity. But the other part is tied to this, you know, what you're getting at, which is, as all of these people have flooded into North Texas and they found Frisco and McKinney and Prosper and Plano and Flower Mound and Allen, et cetera, but also it's been accompanied by this mass relocation of businesses to Texas and to North Texas. There are, you know, just take California. I mean, there are tons of California businesses uprooting and coming to this area. And when they do, now pandemic has changed this, maybe not everybody makes the move, but generally when they make a move like that, hundreds, if not thousands of people are coming with them. So not only does that bring in more of an influx of people needing homes, needing communities, needing this type of content, but the other thing it has actually done is it's in many ways geographically repositioned the center of this metroplex to not be in downtown Dallas anymore. Kind of the new center of DFW is basically, like, if you were here, it's on the toll road and Central Expressway north of downtown. In other words, it's exactly where we're positioned. This is exactly where JP Morgan and Toyota and, you know, I'm trying to think of all the PGA Tour and all of these huge businesses are putting their roots down. So I just say all this to echo your point. It's no longer about, oh, I moved to Plano and now I get in the car and I drive 45 minutes down to downtown Dallas for my commute. And then I come back up to Plano and that's my life. So much of this metroplex has completely relocated and repositioned to these areas where they've become destinations unto themselves.
It basically means that, like, north of, what's going to happen basically is things won't be centered in Dallas anymore. Things will be centered basically in Oklahoma. I mean, basically that's where sort of the growth is going. It's going so far north, like Sherman, we're getting to Sherman, Texas now, which is almost like right on the brink here with Oklahoma. That's where everything will sort of move. And then these corporate headquarters are moving kind of north to kind of create this, like, center, you know, with it. You know, just to kind of the whole, like, you know, what happened within the last 2 years, people want to discover, like, you know, their communities. It's totally true. And I think that, you know, when I was in media companies, what we would do is, you know, we would, like, push content all day, you know, like we were writing things, they were happening, we were pushing it out and pushing it out and pushing it out. What happens when you do that is when people are trying to, like, discover things, it's really hard for them to discover things. Like, when you go to the sites, it's just difficult. And so we very purposely tried to build something that was, like, very much like a resource. So unlike a news site, its goal is to, like, bang, 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 bang all day. Like, we're pushing stuff out all day, but we're trying to do it in a way where somebody goes to, like, this section and they can take actions around this section. So the goal isn't, like, get the latest news in this area here. The goal is to, like, land on the McKinney page and be able to, like, actually plan some things out, or, like, find a company to, like, serve something that you're actually kind of looking for. So it's just a very, like, purposefully different way of approaching it. And look, I think that'd be very difficult for a new site to do, but for our perspective, it works very much because our model is evergreen. Our model isn't, like, I'll tell you, I often say no to myself in my head often, like, oh, that's a big story. Don't do that thing, or do it in a totally different way, because, like, honestly, in a day, it's not going to matter. And everything on our site has to matter way more than one day. And so it's just a really different way of thinking about content.
It sounds like, and you can tell me if I'm off here, but it sounds like it's more of an approach about resource providing rather than coverage. You're not covering the news.
Yeah, I would say we cover things that happen, and we make sure things that are, like, curious, that people have curiosity around, and we'll probably use in their life. So, like, last week, a Whole Foods was announced. The week before that, an HEB, which is a big grocery store chain in Texas, was announced. So we do those sorts of, like, you know, business stories. But other things that we're doing are really kind of core around, you know, how can they apply this? How can they, like, we have this, like, little chart on one of our presentations that kind of goes, this is sort of, like, what makes content go for us. And we'll do it if it, like, is shareable, meaning, like, I can share it over the fence, or I can share it on Facebook. It's actually helping somebody actually, like, take an action in their life. and it's actually searchable. It's like so much of our site is really when Google, you know, gets up in our indexing as we get more authority there, it's great. It's going to be great because the site is really built around search terms. It's how I actually build a lot of the content based on what I can kind of see in those Google tools. So it's very unique, I think, from that perspective.
Let me just add one more thing on that, which is this is not to like diminish breaking news. One, there are a lot of people doing breaking news. So we can't really be differentiated if we're doing breaking news. Like the Dallas Morning News does breaking news, and the Star Telegram does breaking news, and Star Media does breaking news, and like even Community Impact does breaking news to a certain degree. So like I don't think there's a lot of like white space new opportunity there. Also, just to be really blunt about it, breaking news is valuable. Let me start with that statement. But breaking news becomes much, 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 much less valuable the minute it's broken. And by the next day, it may not be valuable at all. And by the next week, it may have very, very little long tail value. And we just believe, to David's point, we've got to create things that have real, substantial long tail and long term value. One, because it's consistent with our product and everything that we're trying to achieve, like David described. Two, candidly, we're two guys building a media company. And yes, we have a network of contractors and freelancers, et cetera, but this comes back to the point about saying no to things, whether that's new products or it's something for a partner or it's a particular type of content. Some of it's being true to who you are, and some of it's just the reality of resource and saying there's opportunity cost. And if we go off and chase that and do that, and we're not confident that it's core to our mission and can deliver clear benefits, then we're sacrificing something else that it potentially could be or should be. And that's the game of trade-offs you play with every decision.
Well, let's go ahead and make that connection then. Let's move from you've got your content plan and the questions you're answering, the information you are providing. How are you connecting that to business partnerships, sponsorships, advertising? There's the question we all have. How are we making money and how are we going to make it sustainable?
Sure. I mean, we can answer the first question pretty definitively. Yeah, you know, we're working every day on the second question. Those are not the exact same thing, but we feel pretty good about it. And I think David will have some perspective to add on this too. You know, I think, look, we're very openly for profit. We are an open platform and have openly accessible content, i.e. there's no paywall. It's not a subscription product. This is meant to be a utility and a resource to all of our communities. And we're proud of that. And so that means we have to make money in other ways. Now, there could be reader revenue opportunities for us down the road. And we're actively looking at what those things can be. But I pretty definitively don't think it's a paywall, a hard paywall. So for us as a for-profit, our business is around helping businesses grow. Our business is around what I call marketing partnerships. And people hear that sometimes from me and they're like, that's just more of your business gibberish for advertising and sponsorship. And the answer is yes, but also no. I mean, can somebody advertise on our site and our email and social? Of course, and they do. You know, do we have high impact targeted sponsorships across sections and city pages and, you know, newsletters? Yes. And we're doing that with different partners, whether it's real estate or it's community partners, different types of businesses, on and on. But I think what we're really doubling down on in terms of what we're delivering, but also in our message, is really everything that we do for our business partners, large, small, real estate, finance, education, whatever, is about great content. And that is consistent with the essence of who we are as a media company. We succeed or fail every day based on the quality of our content for our readers and also for our business partners. And so what does that really mean in practice? What it really means, first off, people are thinking, oh, that means you do a lot of sponsored content, right? Yeah, that means we do a lot of sponsored content, no question. But it doesn't stop there. What it really means is the way we introduce ourselves to a business is by saying, in this day and age, sure, branding matters and smart targeted advertising can be important, but ultimately it's really about content. What we're really getting down to is how do you tell the story of what makes you different? What makes you helpful? How do you stand out from the crowd? There are, as an example, 37,000 licensed realtors in Dallas-Fort Worth. That's a city of realtors by itself. I just had coffee with one. This is the leftover coffee from one I just met with. Her challenge is oh my God, how do I stand out from the other 36,999? And it really is about content. And so for us, it's sponsored content. It's your ability to align with our great content that you love and that you believe in, and all of the unique ways that we can integrate you within and around our content. And that's advertising and sponsorship, but being really smart and strategic about it. And we've even created some different kind of custom licensing and syndication businesses where people have said, this is not something we had at launch. This is something that was born out of listening to customers and to businesses where they were like, yeah, content, I need more content. I need it to tell my story. I don't have any time. I'm not a marketer. I don't have a budget. I love your stuff. Help. And so we said, look, great custom sponsored content is not going to work for everybody. It can work for a lot of people. We're seeing the take rate really take off, which is exciting. But for a lot of other people, it's solve this problem differently for me. And so we've been able to create different products that are basically either versions of our existing content that are kind of repurposed and customized and tailored for a partner to power their marketing. Or it's like using what we know about the market and about topics that readers and community members care about to then build products for their marketing based on that, to do video kind of things that are informed by what we know about what audiences care about, or to power somebody's, you know, email newsletter through our content based on what we know that audiences love. So that's become a whole business line for us that we didn't anticipate, you know, 9 months ago that came out of these conversations. But I mean, the key word, the through line in all of this is content.
The News Nirvana podcast is brought to you by Town News, the creators of Audience Plus. Audience Plus replaces your old school one-size-fits-all paywall with a smarter metering solution that targets visitors with custom offers, converting drive-bys into paying subscribers. You can learn more at townnews.com/audience.
David, that sounds like the dream that we all wanted 20 years ago of somebody on the business side saying, yeah, you're right. Content is king. It's have you found a nirvana, an oasis?
You know, one of the things I think is interesting about this is, you know, so we have this program called Experts, and the Experts program, they started as real estate pros, and now they're getting into like visitor bureaus and, you know, some city people and some moms. And the idea with it is that we get like a lead from somebody. So somebody sort of says, hey, you guys should really talk to this real estate agent, or you should really talk to this mom. And so we talk to them, we vet them, and we determine that they really know their space. So they may know like maybe their mortgages, or maybe they really know, you know, kids activities or whatever it might be, things to do. And we really then end up kind of working with them to actually build content. So in some case, it's actually a free program to kind of get into. People can't like buy into the program. We kind of bring them into the program, and then they can sort of choose to buy if they want like more free and answer more questions or get more distribution and do video with me and all that kind of stuff. But what's unique about it, I think, is that it actually brings the advertiser into the story. And so, sure, an advertiser can get brought into a story from a sponsored content story. Like, that's like nothing new. What's new about this, though, I think, is that it brings them into, it puts them into the kind of a very, like, they're not a boxy ad, basically, sitting somewhere that you kind of scroll by, or an ad that is like overly intrusive and like, you know, smacking you in the face. It like actually makes them useful, and they are useful. And it just like, it lifts them in a very sort of like different way that I think they like. And, you know, they're getting actually, it's just interesting. Like, you don't really think about this today very much. You don't think about like how, you know, advertisers can be part of storytelling in a way that actually they're like the source. But if they own an area and they understand an area well, they really can be the source. And what we're doing through this expert program, we're building like a relationship. And so like now the audience is getting to know them the same way that like for a newspaper, the audience would get to know a columnist. And it's really sort of the same thing. They're kind of building
sponsored content that's not icky.
It's not icky. It's not, they're not trying to sell anything. And every time they try to sell something, like, you know, they'll at the end of it, they'll be like, you know, and you should contact me because I'm the kind of realtor that can give you these kind of, you know, solutions, like X, you know, because when you open new stuff like that, it just, you lose the audience.
You've lost the reader. Yeah.
You really do. So it's just been a very unique way of like making content king, but in a way that is actually not just helpful to the audience, but it's actually really helping the advertiser too.
I like what you guys are doing. This is going to circle it back a little bit to the audience and the reader engagement. Is I think like no other time in the industry, the reader is so valuable, so important to every part of the business plan, right? So providing the information that they want and they need, but then also getting them to the people, the marketing partners. I'm going to use your words there.
Well done. Perfect.
I don't want to get a shot collar. I don't want that.
Nobody wants that for me.
but then bringing them to those resources, to those partners in a way that, and I mean, I kind of joke when I say that doesn't feel icky, but David, you know, our backgrounds, right? That was we'd get that chill feeling whenever somebody asked us to do sponsored content. You're not doing that, and you're finding a way to really engage your readers and give them what they're looking for. And I think that's what we're all trying to figure out is how to do that, because look, readers are our revenue source now too. And that we never looked at them that way before.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people say, you know, you got to go where the audience is, and yep, you sure do. Like, you know, that's why you got to have a great mobile site and you got to be active in social and all those things. But you actually have to go where the audience is. Here's what I mean by that is this. You know, we can create content and we can like put it out organically and we can even pay, you know, to put in social campaigns and everything. But really the way that you get content to your audience is by seeing things that they're actually needing. And so, for example, you know, Facebook groups, they're very clearly asking for things. They're asking like, I've moved here, give me a preschool I should take my kid to. Hey, I think this is a really weird one, but this is happening a lot. People from outside of Texas, I'm moving to Texas. What from California? What route should I take? It was really, I saw it like over and over and over. I'm like, I-40, like take I-40. So what we did is we went and we built a story for people from different points in California and the routes that they can take, where they should stay, and where they should eat and attractions they should go to on the way there. And it was incredibly popular because people were like, this is exactly, you know, what I needed. So some of it's like, it's like that listening part. Then it's like where your audience is. I can see it in Facebook group. They are asking questions. And so what I do sometimes is I'll say, oh, that's a great story for us to do. Or I'll pop in and be like, hey, we actually have this story here. This is who we are. And I think it might be helpful for you. And here it is. And like people, I mean, it's obvious, but people appreciate that. What media, like in my past, I would never have done that. You know, what I would have done is like, if there was a comment somebody made and we wanted to clear something up, we would clear it up. You know, we'd want to be transparent and, you know, or try to be helpful. But this is a whole different level of like being where your audience is. And there's lots of different ways that we're sort of doing this, but it's just very different than, you know, way I just personally have, you know, kind of acted and behaved with the audience kind of in the past.
You know, I'll just add one quick thought on that too, which is, David captured it perfectly, being where an audience truly is. And I think that the complement to that is being there the way they want you to be there. And what I mean by that is like, if you look at most of our content, it's not written to be long form. Sure, there are long form pieces David will do. We have a series right now about affordability and this idea of like balanced housing, and not everybody can afford a 4-bedroom, 3-bath home in the suburbs. So what are your options? Like, we will do enterprise and deeper pieces like that. But day to day, it's just not how people consume, generally speaking. It's not how they're living their lives. And so, sure, we need to be present and helpful in Facebook groups and other community forums. And then we need to be helpful with content that's actually delivered in a format that they want and is digestible and readable for them. So lots of our stuff is short in bursts. It might have infographics. It has lots of photos. Our storytelling is meant to actually, like, we can go where they are. But if we go where they are in a way that doesn't resonate with them, or they don't have time for, or they're not interested, then we've still lost them. You look at our email newsletter. Our email newsletter is not, and there are great, you know, email newsletter products out there, 6 a.m. City and Axios and Morning Brew and all these things. We're not trying to be that. Those are these like definitive email products, and there's 27 links in there, and I'm going to spend 15 minutes in that. And it's like, you got to be really good at that product to get me to even spend 5 minutes in that. And those are world-class email providers. Our idea is like, I'll go back to my coffee cup, which is now empty. This is about how much time you have with somebody in the Starbucks line, not drinking the latte, ordering the latte and getting the latte, either in the drive-through or the walk-through. So our email newsletter is basically like the stuff you need to know to get you to the site to read the things that we want you to read while you're getting your latte. That's basically a very sort of casual way of putting it. But I think we may not love that reality with readers today, It may be it's certainly a difficult reality to navigate. 85, you know, huge percent of our audience is mobile, but it is the reality. And if we sit here and think we're going to change that behavior, that's a fool's errand.
Have you found in your research, and I like to ask people in different markets this, that reading, I think you just said mobile, right, is by far the bulk. Reading, and there's so many ways to package your product, right? I mean, there's newsletters, there's your website, there's this, there's podcasting, video series, photo. Are you finding most of them still want, even if it's a 5-minute read, they still want to just scroll through and read?
Yeah, I mean, we're finding the read is still important. I think we can sort of see the time on things and where the consumption's like happening and where, you know, it's not, they're not like staying with it as long. So that really kind of gets down to kind of more topical things. You know, galleries are faster than, you know, kind of an explainer, you know, an explainer on something. I would say, you know, we're sort of like, we're doing more video now for partners. And we're obviously looking how we can do our own, you know, our own videos. I would say from that perspective, I think that there's going to have a desire to have, you know, more consumption from us from that, whether we're using Reels or we're approaching it in a different way. Like, I think we're going to have to figure out how to, like, I think we've done a good job of visualizing our content within words and images. We're going to have to figure out how to visualize our content a little bit more, I think, you know, through video and, you know, kind of audio going forward. But what I'm learning is that it's not a new learn for me, because I said it for years and now it's actually true. It's funny to, like, you know, be in charge of things and say we should do these things, and now I have to do them. And it's just a funny world. What I'm sort of seeing is everything that makes headlines actionable for people and fun for people, and then that actually can guide people through content in, like, you know, chunks and chapters, and good flow and good use of embeds and all those things, is keeping people basically, you know, kind of on pages for much longer than when we're just sort of in and out with, you know, just straight up words. I mean, that is not a new learning, but we see it in the data like every day.
Speaking of that, what for you, what are you seeing? What data is important for you to look at, not just for your content building, but for as you go seek those marketing partners? What audience data are you finding is really important to watch and track?
Need that, Jed?
I mean, sure. It's interesting for us because we're not a one size fits all company. We're not trying to cover everything, like I talked about earlier. So seeking sheer mass and volume is not the end game for this product. You have to have a big enough product and a big enough audience, though, to matter, whatever that means, you know, and I think we're continuing to figure out what that means for us, you know, and we have tens and tens of thousands of users, distinct users, and tens of thousands of new users every month. And that's important. And the page views that they represent are important. And I'm not going to sit here and minimize that. With that said, like, first off, we're not covering all of Dallas. It would be different if we were covering 25 communities in Dallas-Fort Worth. We're really principally focused on 6 or 7. Now, and some are big. Plano's 400,000 people. Frisco and McKinney are 200,000 and growing like crazy. Prosper and Salina and Flower Mound are smaller. Now they're growing fast, but they're smaller. I mean, they're less than 100,000 people. So it's not going to be about sheer volume, just because if we wanted sheer volume, we'd go chase the whole Metroplex and 7.4 million people. It's also not going to be sheer volume because our product it's in big, important niches, but it's not in every category. So audience size, big enough to matter kind of thing. But really, ultimately, what we're getting at, I'm sure a lot of people talk about this, but I think for us, it's certainly true, is engaged users. People that are coming back, certainly, repeatedly, and people that are really spending time in our stories and spending really multiple pages per session. That's probably one of the biggest metrics we've circled and that we're happy with thus far and kind of proud of, I think, and looking to continue to grow, is pages per session. You know, getting somebody to our experience, and they go, well, first, the article that I came to your site for is interesting. It helped me get the job done that I wanted to get done. And I will spend some time and go find some other things that are relevant because you did that job for me. Combined with a user experience where they go, oh, it's really easy for me to find other things. It's easy for me to navigate. It's an easy site to understand. The related content and the research and all that really works for me. It's a clean experience. It's a fast experience. This is where you combine both quality content and UI. And you put those together and say, okay, the net effect of that can be somebody stays with you longer. And then if they stay with you longer, well, that's a habit-forming activity, which we then believe will drive them to come back more often, spend more time per story, and then also get into the habit of sharing it. And so those are all, I think, just as important metrics for us, if not more important. You have to have enough of a baseline audience to just be out there in your communities. But I guess maybe to bring it all together, and I mean, I think, David, this is true. We have not had one partner conversation, prospect or existing partner, where the focus has been around the mass of our audience. And we have not made or lost a sale with a partner because somebody said, oh, you have X number of users and I hoped you would have Y, or I thought you would have Z. We have enough users for them to go, oh, you guys are legit and you're here and you're in the community. And then they see our engagement numbers and they go, ah, okay, this product really seems to be resonating with those users that you're talking to me about. But then in a good way, the discussion becomes less quantitative and less sort of like quant geek nerd out on Google Analytics and more qualitative. I really like this product. If I'm a realtor, I could use this product with my clients and it'll make me look like a hero because I'll be informing them of things they need. Or, God, I love the voice of this content. I could see my brand in this. Or I'd love to have content with this kind of voice. Or, man, if you guys create content like this for yourselves, what could you do for me? And so then it becomes more qualitative, anecdotal, more personal. And so we have data that gets us to the table, but then we have a story that people really warm up to. And that's ultimately where I think the partnership is kindled.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would add here is, Jed and I, as we're, talking to people who kind of came on with us early and now we're, wanting to, have them to, continue on with us, which they are, which is great. We're talking about like, hey, here's like the overall numbers are important in some level. What's most important though, is that we're actually getting traction for the things that they're actually working with us on, the content we're working with them on, and that we're actually working hard to get that content out to the audiences that they're trying to actually reach. And so sure, some of that can be done technologically through targeting, but a lot of it is honestly like boots on the ground sort of stuff to make sure that we're kind of, promoting them effectively and that we're kind of getting as far and wide as we possibly, can. So I just want to make that point. The other thing I was going to say is we're seeing big, as any new publication is, you see big bursts of new users every month. And if you're doing things right, and what you have to do is you got to figure out how to like retain those new users, And so that's like an ongoing thing for us. The better that we get at retainment, meaning like they're going to sign up for something, they're going to come back to us, they're in a channel of ours, the better we are. And everybody has that challenge, but I think a new publication publisher has that challenge, even more so. So we're trying to make sure that, if we're inviting them to do something like that's working well, we're giving them a good pop on the newsletter. We're giving them enough things that they can kind of see, they can kind of stay with us. So it's not one and done. And in a place as big as Dallas, it can be kind of one and done. And so we're working really hard on, on that.
You are almost at the 5-month anniversary. So let's look ahead. What do you want to have done? What's the big goal for the 12-month, the 1-year anniversary? What are your big goals?
Man, David, you want me to tackle that?
Besides a shot of something good, right, to celebrate. Right.
I mean, I think I'll take the first shot at this, I guess, and David can offer his point of view on it. First off, there's just, I'm not saying this as a line, it's true. There's so much work to still do just in these 7 or 8 communities that we're principally focused on. I mean, we've been here less than 5 months and we've been so intentional about building community partnerships and deep relationships in those communities. It's something David and I are very proud of. We, in fact, had a conversation earlier today with a chamber and a downtown Main Street group in one of our key cities. And we've been able to foster a number of those with school districts, with economic development, visitors bureaus, mayors, chambers, and more. There's a lot more work to be done with that, to truly be in and of the places that we serve, to figure out all the ways that we can serve those places better. And in doing that, to do exactly what David described a minute ago, to reach more of those residents, new and long time, and to really not just reach them, but really start creating habit-forming behavior, create real affinity and favorability around who we are and what we do. There's a lot of work just on that in the next six, seven, I mean, ongoing, but you said a year, just in the next six, seven, 8 months. Equally, there's a ton of work and a ton of runway and opportunity for us with partnerships, with just growing the product base and the content solutions that we have for our partners. I mean, in the first 4 months, we've been pretty intensively focused on the real estate community. And I don't just mean realtors, but title and lenders and builders and developers and communities. But obviously, there's a whole world out there of other categories. We have so much community-based content, helpful content around schools and kids and businesses and nonprofits and whatever. Like, there's a huge opportunity for us to expand our scope of the businesses we talk to. So some of this is just further exhausting and expanding the possibilities of what we can do in these communities. Sure, is there an opportunity potentially as we grow and as we really land this model to take it into other communities just within Dallas-Fort Worth? Yeah. I mean, there's tons more in this metro we haven't even touched yet. I mean, we get asked a lot, like, when are you going to Houston or New Orleans or Kansas City? And we're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, there's 7.4 million people here. We're not even scratching that surface. So there's more ability to expand just within this metro. And I guess the other quick thing I would say is, you know, we're actively, and it's a matter of time cost and opportunity cost and prioritization, but we're actively working on new product ideas all the time. And I think you'll see some things from us, hopefully, you know, in the back half of this year that are pretty exciting. A couple of new products that I think can be disruptive, I think can be deeply helpful to the market and to readers, and also carry with them pretty unique revenue streams to help our business grow in every way, shape, and form. So some of it is, and this is any entrepreneur will tell you, it's balancing short-term and long-term, and that's every day for us. But it's also in looking at our growth and saying, what are the things we're already doing? But like, there's so much more in front of us, and like, we shouldn't cheat that process. But at the same time, where do we really have unique opportunity to expand and be helpful and succeed? And we're very much in the process of figuring out what's the harmony between those two things.
I mean, my answer is a little bit simpler. I just want to get 8 hours of sleep in a night in a year from now. That's my goal.
Does that happen?
I don't know, six, whatever.
Six, yeah, man, you're well rested today. Jeez.
No 4 o'clock emails from me this morning, Jed. You know, I would just sort of say that, you know, the product part of this is really untapped at this point. Like, we have some cool things I think that we're doing. There are things in here that, like, we really could sort of, that could be really unique for the market that we're talking about, that we just haven't really, you know, kind of gotten to yet. And I think, you know, in a year, like, we need to, like, grow the business and grow our infrastructure to be able to sort of, you know, support that. I mean, when two people, like, start something, like, it's the two of you, you know? And I think as we sort of, like, gain more interest and more audience and more, you know, marketing partners, like, that kind of, it's like a growing up thing, you know? And like, you know, right now we're 5 months old, and you kind of do whatever you got to do to get through those, you know, and I mean, whatever, we were joking about the janitor stuff, but you know, like it's a real thing, you know? And I think as we kind of move here, I think, you know, we'll kind of continue to, you know, grow up. I think the product will continue to get, you know, better. I think readers will become even more part of the story than they are today. I think that we'll use our audience more than we're able to use them today, just because it'll be bigger. I mean, you need a bigger audience to be able to, like, you know, be able to, like, utilize their, you know, them. And I think that we'll be out and about much more than we are today, you know, as we kind of really figure out where we're gonna, you know, where we're really gonna kind of plant ourselves. I mean, we sort of see that today. Like, you can't treat everything like, you know, not everybody's, you know, we treat it exactly the same in terms of every place we're trying to cover, everything we're trying to cover. I think we're learning where to kind of put ourselves. I think we're going to learn just a lot more. I think we'll just, you know, become better.
Well, as we wrap up here, if people want to follow the Checkout DFW story, maybe they want to reach out to you and share some ideas, maybe pick your brains a little bit. How can people follow you guys, contact you guys?
Yeah, so it's checkoutdfw.com, very easy website. And my email is david@checkoutdfw.com, and Jed's is Jed, J-E-D, @checkoutdfw.com. Thought I should spell that for Starbucks people out there. And then, you know, we have a newsletter you can sign up for. It'll be sent out a few times a week. We're on all the socials and all those things.
I'm a big fan of News Twitter. I think that's a great place to connect with people in our industry. Are the two of you on the Twitters?
We are.
Very much so. I'm pretty active there. I probably spend more of my time on Twitter than any other social media source for exactly the reason you said. And for those people that are critical of Twitter, I tell them that Twitter is all about how you curate it and all of what you make of it. And so there's an interesting set of discussions in News Twitter going on quite a bit. I agree with you.
So your handle is?
I guess this was taken when I tried to set this up a billion years ago. So I'm at my last name, first name. So at Williams Jed, just to confuse people.
Mine's a little bit more straightforward. I'm at David_Arkin.
There we go. Well, I'm a big fan of News Twitter, Beer Twitter, and Sports Twitter.
There you go.
Those are three pretty good places, but except when you combine too much Beer Twitter and Sports Twitter, sometimes things can get a little unruly. So I'm a Carolina basketball fan. I did my master's at UNC. So if we mix a little too much Beer Twitter with like Duke Carolina Final Four Twitter, we could have a problem.
Right. There could be a problem there.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure you're halfway worked up already as you get set for the Final Four.
Halfway. I've been a basket case since Sunday night. Like, I'm an emotional disaster getting ready for this week, and I've been completely open about that.
Well, David, Jed, thanks so much for your time on this. Good luck with Checkout DFW. It sounds great. I really like that we seem as an industry finally ready to give the audience, the readership, the credit they deserve as their part in our cycle.
Absolutely.
Fun to talk to you. Thanks for the good words and support.
Well, we will talk to everybody next time.
The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Town News. Connect with Town News at townnews.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.